They're looking for, they're waiting for this outcome to give them this dopamine rush, and they're not even living in the present because everything they're doing is focused on this one day.
Yeah.
And then how can you enjoy this journey if it's going to end one day?
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to another episode of Real Business Owners with myself, Trevor Cowley. Today we have Tony Mont as a guest on the show, traveling far to come see us, drop some knowledge on us, and hopefully enlighten us about, you know, the better way to live life, a better way to make money. And so I'm excited to have you on the show. Appreciate you coming out, dude.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Pleasure is all mine.
Yeah.
Love Utah.
Yeah. So we're sitting down and talking. He's like, oh, yeah, I've mountain biked this, and I've hiked Zion. I'm like, he's seen more of Utah than I've seen of Utah, and I've lived here my whole life.
But you get to see it every day. Yeah. That's the thing.
I know.
Like, I look out my window at the office, it's a parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, you get to look at the mountains and all that. Like, that changes your mood every day. Like, I lived in San Diego for 13 years.
Yeah, having the San Diego backdrop.
Every day, I could see the mountains from my bathroom window at my house. I could see the ocean from
Raleigh.
Raleigh. Why?
I ask myself that every single day.
Was it just a purely business move?
Pure business, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were you doing in San Diego when you were in San Diego? Were you in the real estate game?
Not at all.
Okay. Professional mountain biker.
I was a professional mountain biker. I wish.
Yeah. He tried.
Didn't have that skill.
Yeah. an unpaid professional mountain biker, you know, an intern.
It was nice out in San Diego. So
yeah,
the reason I got to mountain bike all the time and go off-roading and hiking and all this stuff I love and travel is because I had a business that was kind of on autopilot out there.
Okay.
And I could break away from it. Like the last 5 years I had that business, I could do kind of whatever I wanted. I could come and go as I please. I had enough money. I had all the time in the world. I'm not married. I don't have kids.
So you are on here to share all the secrets.
Yes, I am. Get married. Don't have kids. That's it.
Oh, that's it. That is it. Those are two large expenses.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
But time.
Well, you said like, hey, I had this thing that was working for me pretty much rather than the majority of businesses work for their business, right? And then they end up resenting the very thing that has the ability to change their life because they're not really taking the right steps or delegating or hiring or bringing on the right people. So therefore, they are their own worst enemy, but they would rather place blame on the business than look in the mirror and say, okay, there's something's got to give here and I need to change.
Right? Yeah, and that's a good point. It's like, how hard do we work to build these businesses? And then we just got to work a little extra harder to, like, you know, structure it where you don't have to be there every day.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a weird thing where people just kind of get stuck in that mindset of like, maybe it's a control thing.
I think it is.
You know, or it's like, this is my baby. I built it from zero and I don't want to give it away. And I don't want somebody to not be at 100% every day in here because, you know, business is going to fall off. But if you have that limited mindset, you're never going to build other businesses and progress. So it's like if five people were doing, you know, 70% of what you could do, that's way more than what you can do by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's ever going to do it the same as you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I think when you put that much energy, time, and effort into something, I think sometimes there's an ego thing about it. Like, well, I've always been the problem solver, right? And this business couldn't do what it needs to do without me at the helm.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, your ego is saying the business needs you. And in order to serve your ego, you keep showing up and doing the same things that you've always done in order to have this need to be filled, to be needed.
Yeah.
Right. And so like there was a whole bunch of shit that I went through too. And it was like, okay, I'm bitching about this problem or hard to find good employees or, you know, all of the normal things. Like it was nothing that I was dealing with was unique to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was just part of the process of being an entrepreneur. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
And so it's like, you think that you are the only one. Well, how are all these other businesses out there? And then how are some people able to own a business and pop in and out,
right,
and their business isn't shut down yet, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So it's like I had to go internally and ask myself some questions, like,
yeah.
I was doing like breath work or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, they're like, hey, what's the word that you want to have going into it, right? And I'm like, oh, freedom. You know, because literally if you ask anybody, everyone wants freedom, time freedom, financial freedom, like,
absolutely.
It's freedom, right? So I go into the breath work, whatever, and that's a trip. I don't know if you've ever done like deep breath work stuff.
I've done like deep meditation.
Yeah.
I've done like the sensory deprivation tank.
There's answers in there.
Oh, God.
Inside you. Sitting
yeah.
there waiting for you to find.
And once you dig through the panic attack
yeah,
and
yeah,
anxiety
yeah.
of it all, when you're finally
you
alone with your thoughts and you're
yeah.
thinking about stuff you said to
yeah.
your third grade teacher you
yeah.
regret.
Yeah.
You know?
You're just like, bro, filing cabinet after filing cabinet's getting open. You're recycling, rehashing old shit, and you're trying to organize maybe some of the past decisions or decisions that you need to make right now. But so I go into this with, okay, the idea is freedom. Like, I want to figure out how to do that. And like, whatever, 30 minutes into the breath work, the voice kind of comes and says, you can't have freedom. And I was like, why? Well, true freedom means that you're letting go, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can't control something and have freedom.
No, because even if you're not there, it's going to take up mental space too.
That, dude, it's like, the problem is we must let go of the very thing that we don't want to let go of in order to free ourselves, right? We have to do it. And I said, okay, well, I have to let go if I want freedom. I can't have the reins and have freedom at the exact same time, right? And then I said to myself, I'm okay, well, why do I feel the need to be in control? And then the answer came and it said, you have a need to feel needed.
Mm, yeah.
Right. And so
damn.
It's like,
that's
it,
so true.
It kept like, I kept going deeper, a layer deeper, like why? So the fact is, yes, our phone blows up with this problem or whatever. And we complain to other people about the very things that bring us value or make us feel valuable to other people. Because if your phone didn't blow up and you didn't have all the answers, then maybe you wouldn't feel like you're an individual value. But at the exact same time, you're complaining about the very thing that is what you do to bring value to your life and to your business. And so it's like, okay, let's just get rid of all that then. Now what?
Yeah.
Now you are just left alone with yourself. So who are you?
Right?
It's almost like
that's
the problem.
Scariest thing.
Yeah, the problems are a distraction
yeah.
from us really having to like, what would happen if I just gave you $100 million right now? And you didn't have to do anything tomorrow, answer to nobody, no obligation, you had pure time. What would your day look like?
Yeah, like, I mean, my day is going to be way different now than if you gave me $100 million 20 years ago. It's like, you know, you do have to have that mind shift of like, am I really doing this to become a billionaire or am I doing this? Like we talked about earlier with the running and the working
yeah.
out. It's like,
yeah.
am I just doing this every single day because this is how I stay disciplined and this is what makes me feel good every single day?
Yeah.
Like there's not like this ultimate goal, you know, we were talking about if people are, you know, have some type of workout they're doing and there is, you know, a finish line to it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I sign up for a marathon. So therefore they train harder.
Right.
During those 3 months or 4 months than they ever have because they put something out there that's big and scary
right.
that's forcing them to operate in a different way outside of their normal. But then when that marathon is there and they accomplish it, what happens?
Yeah, they fall off.
They fall off.
Because they're looking for this outcome. And that's another thing. They're waiting for this outcome to give them this dopamine rush. And they're not even living in the present because everything they're doing is focused on this one day.
Yeah.
And then how can you enjoy this journey
yeah.
if it's going to end one day?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that. Like, the first time I ever stepped foot in a gym, I was 15 years old. I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this every day for the rest of my life. You know, like it was
like, you look like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it keeps me on the straight and narrow. It doesn't
yeah.
matter what happens in life. If you stay super busy and disciplined every single day, all the other shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like, how can I keep my mind focused and stay happy and keep anxiety out and keep depression down. It's like, it's not by sitting on a couch and worrying about shit.
Dude, the only way to find fulfillment in the process is not looking for an end.
Right, right. 100%.
It's impossible to find fulfillment in the process if there's, you're doing it until X date.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Right? Like, everybody can't wait till 75 hard is over, which is, we were talking about. They can't wait for that pizza and beer on day 76.
Yeah.
To celebrate.
Right.
Right? Like, what's keeping them on the straight and narrow is day 76.
Right.
Because they know that this is going to end. So are you really getting out what you want to get out of that program if all you're thinking about is, I can't wait till the end?
Right.
Are you really getting lost in the process and discovering yourself? What that, all that did is make me realize that, yes, you could do very difficult things if you live an intentional life,
mm-hmm.
and you can find beauty in the process and the growth that you experience. That's where the fulfillment is. It's not the end result of day 76, the pizza and beer, because everybody that has the pizza and beer on day 76, 100% of them say, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you just, you, what you did is, you just acted unlike yourself for 75 days,
right.
and then you found the old version of you on day 76,
yeah.
and now you're back to who you were when you started on day one, which is an individual that you didn't want to be,
right.
which is why you started in the first place,
right.
but you just wanted to be a part of the cool kids club, so you'll sacrifice 75 days, but you really don't want to change your life.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
They do not, because they would do it every single day, and most people that start something like that, they start at zero. And then they go to 100 to do this 75 days.
Yeah.
You know, like for me to do 75 hard, I'd have to make like one or two little tweaks throughout my day, you know, but like, how can you go from zero to doing the, you know, whatever they require in 75 hard and think like, oh, this is going to like, I'm just going to change overnight and this is going to be my new lifestyle. It never works because it's too hard for that individual because it's not their lifestyle.
Yeah.
It takes longer than 75 days to make it a routine and a lifestyle. It takes 25 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It takes the fact of just all out committing to, it doesn't matter how I feel, what's going on. This is just who I am and what I'm going to do every day.
Right.
Because I know it's the right thing for me to do.
Yeah.
And I know that the future me will be grateful that I made that deposit. Right.
Yeah.
And like, there's not one person that says, oh man, that was that workout, I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah. Never.
But there's a ton of people that are like, man, I woke up this morning, didn't get it done. I should have went out and got it done because now I feel like shit and I feel jet lag all day.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't fully woke up. I haven't been productive. And they're beating themselves up for the whole rest of the day because they did, which is great. You know, I love the fact that somebody would feel that. Why? Because, you know, we all fall off the wagon and we learn from our mistakes. So cool. Hopefully that's painful enough that's like, dude, I don't care what I feel like. I would rather go through just an hour or two, a little bit of misery than feel like that.
Yeah.
You know, for the full 24 hours a day.
Yeah. Life is a lot harder when you don't. Like, people think of it like, God, that seems so daunting. Like, you work out every day. Like, you eat healthy, you work out, you do cardio, you lift weights. Like, that seems so hard.
Because it's they're
like,
looking for an end and they can't find it.
But the thing is, it's like, how much harder is your life when you don't do those things?
Yeah.
You know, how much feel like shit when you don't do those things? And it's the same with like, I have friends I grew up with that. I got a buddy who's in his 40s who's like never worked a day in his life. Like he's just like always
rich
trying
parents
to.
Or what?
No, he's
or
just what? Trying to, you know, grab from here or there, take
Rob Peter, baseball,
couch surf for 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he looks at like my life as, man, you're like, man, that's a lot of work. Like you're building businesses, you're doing all this shit. And I'm like, your life is way harder.
A lot of work.
Your life is way harder. Because when you need to go somewhere, you don't have a car. And now you got to call everybody to get a ride. Or you got to ride your bike in a storm to go somewhere. You got to do this or that. It's like, that's way harder and you can't even see it. You can't see the forest from the trees. But it took me, like, I mean, I grew up in Illinois, Rockford, Illinois, with Eric, who was on this podcast, right?
You guys were
we were buddies.
So Tony and Eric's Klein partner in TLC Home Buyers.
Yeah,
the industry is real estate wholesaling,
right? Real estate.
Teaching other people. You guys are doing that now.
Yeah,
mastermind stuff, whatever.
Yep.
selling scripts and
everything,
you know, the whole gamut. It's cool. So
So we've been in that business for almost 3 years, done on, you know, over $7.5 million in assignment fees.
That's cool.
In like 2.5 years. So yeah, it's been a great journey. But yeah, grew up in Rockford, and like I was listening to your podcast with Eric, and I was like, damn, we all kind of have similar stories. It's like kind of grew up, we got in trouble, and then we kind of figured it out. And it was the same with me. Like, you know, grew up in a very blue collar family. You know, dad, I don't know, was he an alcoholic? He drank a lot, worked a lot, you know, that kind of thing. My ma cleaned houses when I was a kid, didn't graduate high school.
Yeah.
So just very blue collar. My grandparents were, you know, from Sicily. And I just didn't really have direction, you know. My brother had 2 heart transplants. He's now fighting cancer, and he was always sick as a kid. And it was like a lot of focus was on him.
Yeah,
thankfully.
Yeah.
Because you know they were trying to save his life, but at the same time, it was like I got super independent when I was a kid. Mm. But without like the proper like structure, I was just like what do they say? Idle hands are the devil's playground. It's like
our idle minds or
100%.
Yeah.
Like if I have any free time, like my mind immediately goes to like, how do I self-destruct? Mm-hmm. And it was the same when I was younger and I was getting in a lot of trouble, started having like bad anxiety, you know, when I was a teenager and all that. And then ultimately found, you know, working out in football and track and stuff in high school.
Yeah.
And that was like kind of, you know, kind of straightening me out for a few years. And then hit 17, my best friend died in my arms in an accident, watched him bleed to death. And then that just triggered like all this bad behavior, like self-medicating and drinking and doing blow and like experimenting with like every drug in the book.
Yeah.
And that ultimately ended at 22. I got in a bar fight and accidentally killed somebody in a bar fight.
Wow.
And he was an off-duty police officer, which I didn't know. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have fought him.
Yeah.
But that all happened one night in a split second. And next thing you know, I'm in jail, get bailed out. A couple weeks later, he dies. And then I get charged with first-degree murder.
Wow.
So I caught a murder charge at 22. And then in and out of jail from 22 to 24, just waiting for my trial. I was either, you know, in jail or on house arrest, basically. I could still go to work, but that was it. I had curfews. I couldn't drink. I couldn't do anything. I just literally could go to work and had to be home at a certain time. They would check on me. They would show up at my house. And at 24, I stood trial for this murder charge, and it was like 2 weeks of trial. Got found not guilty on self-defense. And then I was like, you know, you would think like after that,
you'd be done.
It'd be done. Yeah. And like, oh, like happy. And like, now I got this.
You're a stoner though.
But like, so it wasn't the trouble after that. It was literally like, I remember my trial was out on a Friday. I woke up Saturday morning thinking like, you know, my life's going to be better from here on out. I'm, you know, all this stuff. And it was weird. I had like this post-traumatic stress where Saturday morning I woke up and I just like was paralyzed with anxiety. And I was like, all this stuff I was focused on not going to prison for the rest of my life for almost 2 years. And now those thoughts, I don't have those thoughts anymore. So it's like, now where is my brain going? It felt like somebody threw my brain in a washing machine. Like I couldn't go to work. I couldn't do anything. I ended up... I was living by myself and in an apartment, and I ended up painting all my windows with black paint. Like I bought black paint from like Home Depot and brushed all my windows black so no light would shine through, because even sunlight would give me crippling anxiety after my trial. And I just started drinking a lot. I was drinking like a bottle of Jack Daniels every day, just like trying to numb the pain. And then finally, like my family, my boss, and one of my best friends at the time was like, hey, you can't live by yourself. Like they were worried I was going to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved in with a buddy.
Was that an option on the table when you were at one of your lows like that?
I didn't ever have the thought of like, I'm going to put a bullet in my brain.
Yeah.
But like if I would have drank to the point where I didn't wake up, I was okay with
it. Yeah.
Like I wasn't suicidal, but I was okay with
it. But you didn't care to live.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. Just whatever.
It's like the first step into suicide, sure. But never really suicidal, just didn't want to live. But after all that, moved in with a buddy, ended up getting a dog by suggestion from my doctor. But this is a fun, I say that to tell you this, like, I mean, crippling anxiety. I could barely work.
Yeah.
And I went to my doctor and they're trying to prescribe me all these pills. And I'm like, I don't need pills, you know? And he's like, dude, you just need to take your mind off of something. Like, get a dog or something. Like, he just kind of threw it out there. And then I was working construction at the time. And I was coming home from a job site and I just happened to pass the pound and walked in there. Found this dog, got him, and literally, like, it changed my life.
Wow.
Had him for 13 years. He passed away a couple years ago, but it was like finally I had something to focus on that wasn't myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the beginning of, my healing journey. And then I moved out to San Diego when I was 25. So when I was I used to be an electrician in Chicago. And then the housing market crashed, 08, and I was 25, and I was like, all right. Like, I just got done with a murder trial. I am laid off for the first time in my life. I can't work. Like, I told my girlfriend at the time, I'm like, I'm moving to San Diego. And she's like, why San Diego? I'm like, it's the furthest place from Chicago on a map. And I was like, I have no family there, no friends there. I'm just moving there.
Had you visited there prior?
No. I mean, when I was a little kid, but
nothing.
I was like 7 years old.
Yeah. Nothing that would like be like, oh, this memory here is going to take me to San Diego.
Nope. It literally was just like, it looks nice on a map. And I just like packed up. She moved with me. We moved out there the end of 08. Had no job, no money, nothing. And couldn't get a job because I just got off a murder trial.
Yeah.
So every time, and no construction companies were hiring. Everybody was firing everybody. It was the end of 08 when we got out there. So I would apply for all these places and people would run a background check and they're like, well, you just had 4 felony arrests in the last like 2 years. Like, we're not going to hire you. And I'm like, shit.
Liability.
So funny enough, I'm just like on Craigslist looking for cash gigs. And I ended up answering an ad for, I need, this ad just said, starting a bicycle shop in Pacific Beach, need somebody to build 10 beach cruisers every day for like $100 cash. And I was like, I could live on that right now. So I ended up going, meeting this guy, and he hired me. And within like the first week or two, every 10 bikes I would build in the morning, we would sell in the afternoon. So it got super busy, super fast. He hired me full time and I was like, cool, I can do this until construction, you know, housing market picks back up. I'll be an electrician. I'll, you know, whatever. And it just kept getting busier and busier throughout the year. We did really well that first year working for him. And then that winter he was like, hey, I'm buying this house. I'm using all my money on the down payment. Can you come help me remodel this thing? I don't have any money to pay you, but I need your help. 3 months of remodeling this house. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. If you give me, you know, basically equity into the bike shop. And he's like, all right. So we worked that out, ended up helping him remodel this house for 3 months. And then the next year at the bike shop, had a little bit of equity into it. Did that for another couple years, opened my own shop, 3-4 years into it. And then ended up selling that shop. And then we opened me and my old business partner opened the biggest bike shop in Pacific Beach, which ended up being the highest volume bicycle shop in San Diego. So we were selling like 5,000 bikes a year out of this shop by the beach. We went over to China. We started importing our own brands. We were distributing. We were selling bikes at the shop. And that took like 5-6 years of literally 7 days a week.
Yeah, grinding.
Never, ever taking a vacation, never taking a day off. And like people say 7 days a week, but I literally worked 7 days a week for years.
Not what
years.
It felt like.
No.
It felt like seven, you know.
I literally, because we didn't even hire any, I mean, the shop was open 7 days a week and we didn't even hire anybody till like year three.
Yeah.
I mean, like I literally worked 7 days a week for years. But like we were saying earlier, it's like all that hard work ended up paying off. And when everything stabilized and we had $1 million worth of inventory, we owned cash and we had a manager in place and good mechanics and good salespeople. Then I found myself at the shop one day, like
what am I doing here?
What am I doing here? It was almost like I was an annoyance because I'm so, like we were saying, I'm so controlling. I'm like, yeah. No, I can fix this problem better than you. I can do this better than you. And everybody would just be like, Tony, can you just get out of here?
Yeah.
And I did. I let go.
You ended up being a distraction.
I was a distraction.
Yeah.
And once I let go, which was extremely hard for me, once I did, but then that becomes your new normal, you know? Then it's like, now I was like, all right, I can mountain bike, I can snowboard, I can off-road.
Did you go through any low periods in terms of, okay, stepping back, and then now you're like, okay, what do I do? Or did you just...
No.
Like a fish in water. You're just like, okay, I'm going to start doing this, this, and this.
Yeah, I had all these hobbies that I was putting on the back burner, and I just started gradually, you know, getting into them again. And I went to it really easy, but it was hard in the beginning kind of mentally, but I did let go pretty quickly, and I could enjoy it. And then for the next, like, 5-6 years, I just kind of enjoyed life. And then... You know, the first dip we had in the bicycle market was when, like, remember all, like, the bird scooters and all that stuff was...
Those
rideshare stuff?
Yeah.
So, like, overnight, like, all these bikes and scooters show up all over the streets, and every shop just got cut in half their revenue. Because it's like, should I go buy a beach cruiser for $500 or should I hop on the scooter for $1?
Yeah.
Should I rent a bike for $25 a day or should I just pay $1 to hop on the scooter? So everybody, like every bike shop in town, like their revenue got cut in half. Mm. And that was like the first big dip in the business. And I was like, oh shit, what do we do now? But it was kind of like, if you can't beat them, join them. And we ended up getting a hold of Bird Scooters and we're like, what are you guys doing like with maintenance on all these things? They're like, we didn't even think of that. And we're like, well, we have a empty warehouse, like you can bring them up there, we'll fix them and we'll just charge you a set amount for like a flat tire, a brake adjustment, all this stuff. So they started having all their guys that were charging them, whenever they found a broken one, they would just deliver them to our warehouse, and they were bringing us like 100 scooters a day.
Wow.
So we were just fixing flat tires and all this stuff while everybody else was like trying to like fight in litigation all these scooters, like all these other like all these other shops are like, we gotta shut them down. And we're like, we made like 60-70 grand in like the first 6 weeks fixing these scooters for these guys. So like we just kind of adapted to like, well, where's all the money right now? All this, you know, capital is being poured into these scooters that's taking all our business away. How do we get some of that capital? And we just started fixing them. And then that, you know, ended up getting us through that period. And then it was kind of this new normal of the bike business where it's like, all right, well, everybody's revenue's cut a little bit because all these, you know, free scooters everywhere. And then COVID hit and then it was, you know, balls to the wall again at the bike business. So we ended up ordering, we had like 2,000 bikes in China when COVID hit. And it was like one of those things where it was like, are we going to be shut down for a year? And is it a good idea to like ship all these bikes over here? Should we leave them? And I was just like, I told my partner, I'm like, let's just ship them over and see what happens, whatever. So we ship them over. And then like the minute they landed in port, there was all this news of like, there's a bike shortage. Like it went from toilet paper to bicycles on the news. Remember the toilet paper thing? Everybody was out of toilet paper.
Yeah.
So then it went from like, there's no toilet paper in America to there's no bicycles in America. And that was right when those containers hit port. And we ended up selling, I think in May of 2020, we sold like 1,200 to 1,500 bikes out of our shop in San Diego, like in 1 month. Because it just hit.
Why were so many people looking for bikes?
Because everybody was stuck. Yeah, everybody was stuck at home.
They're like, we can go for a bike ride as a family, go get fresh air.
Yep. So like the bike business blew up during COVID, but most people never adjusted during the bird era, and they were all kind of already going out of business, and they burned all these bridges with all these distributors because they couldn't pay their bills.
Yeah.
We stayed on top of it, never burned a bridge, continued doing business, and then we were able to take advantage of the COVID rush. So that happened, and then ended up, you know, it slowed down in, you know, 2021 a little bit, and then, you know, get a phone call from Eric, and he's like, hey, man, have you ever heard about wholesaling? I was like, no. He's like, you literally get contracts to buy houses over the phone, and then you sell the contract. And I was like, well, how much money does this cost? You got to buy the house. He's like, no, literally, you get a contract signed, you assign it, and you make 20, 30 grand each contract. And I'm like, this sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
Right. But he's like, hey, I'm going to get some leads. I'm going to try and close some deals. If I can close some deals and think it's a good business, you want to jump into business with me, him and Shyla, his wife. And I was like, absolutely. So he started closing some deals and called me, and he's like, we're going to open an office in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we want you to come join us. And that's what I did. So I just, again, packed all my stuff, moved across the country again on a risk of, you know, seeing if I could wholesale real estate. And here we are a couple of years later.
Yeah. So what happened to the bike shop?
You ended up selling it.
Okay. To a partner that you had?
No, we both got out of it. So I thought I could do both.
Yeah.
But it was really hard once I moved. You know, it was just really hard to manage it from so far away. And, you know, my manager quit like 6 months after I moved. Then I'm trying to hire a manager remote. It just got messy. And we ended up having somebody come to us like, hey, I'm looking to buy a business. You know, I want to buy your business. And we ended up selling it to them.
Yeah.
It all worked out.
Did you make some decent money on it? Or
not really.
It's just by the time
that all happened,
the numbers weren't really.
Like, we made money on the inventory because we had a lot of inventory. But the business at that time. Basically bought our inventory from us.
Yeah. And so you got whatever, your $1 million of inventory back. Or
wasn't that much at that time. But yeah, we got a chunk of change, which helped. But you know, I had no emotional attachment to it anymore.
Yeah.
I was already like all in on wholesaling and
across the country for the next thing.
Yeah. And I was all in. Like I was like, you know, in the beginning I told Eric and Shiloh, I was like, hey, I'll come out there for 6 months. I'll keep that place in San Diego. Let me see. But the more I thought about it, I was like, I'm not going to be half in with anything. Like, let me just commit. So I ended up just saying, I'm just going to move and I'm just going to.
So what was the hardest part about that adjustment going from San Diego, totally different business, to was it the fact that, you know, you were kind of able to live a certain life, like mountain bike and do that, and now you're basically getting into startup mode again.
Right.
Right. Hustle, grind.
Yeah.
Let's pound the phones. Let's do this thing ourselves. Let's prove that it works. I mean, that's a big shift to go from, I got something feeding me.
Yeah,
I got to feed something in order for it to eventually, hopefully, feed me.
Well, I was living in San Diego, single at the beach. I owned the, you know, biggest bike shop in Pacific Beach, Party Town, USA.
Yeah.
Weather's perfect every day. I get to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a huge shock moving.
So what's life like now? Okay. You're reminiscing a little bit.
I was 100% ready. You know, like at some point I was like, I was 37 when I moved, and I was like, you know, I have a lot left in me.
Yeah.
I don't need to be living like I'm retired right now.
Yeah.
And I knew this was going to be a great opportunity because, you know, me and Eric have been friends for 20 years. I was, you know, with him through the worst times. He was with me through the worst times. And it was funny because we had a falling out. We used to live together. And we had a $700 a month apartment that we couldn't make rent on when we were like 20 years old. But
best in the good old days.
In the good old days. Yeah, geez. We used to think they were the good old days. They weren't.
Yeah,
but so I saw, like, we were, you know, with each other at our lowest. My murder trial, his addiction. And then we had a falling out. I moved away. He was still using by the time I moved to San Diego. And I was just like, I got to get away from all these people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we talk about all the people we were hanging out with that were just bringing us down.
Straight losers.
Me and Eric were those losers for everybody else.
Yeah.
And once my trial was up and I had this new lease on life and I moved, I cut a lot of people out of my life. And Eric was one of them. But I did hear, like, a year later, he got sober. And, you know, everybody who told me about Eric getting sober, I was like, I don't believe it, but good for him.
Yeah,
right. I don't ever want to see him do it again.
Yeah.
You know, cause we were so bad for each other back then. And, but then, you know, 5-6 years later, I get a phone call. I'm in San Diego. I'm at my bike shop and, you know, get this voicemail from a number I don't know. And I listen to the voicemail. It's like, yo, Tone, this is Klein. I'm in San Diego. Do you still live here? Hit me up.
You're like, oh, I'm like, fuck, dude. I should not call him back.
Dude, I just like, yeah. I just smiled. I was like, this guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I called him and he's like, I'm in somewhere called Pacific Beach. And I'm like, dude, that's where I'm at. I was like, let me come
to my backyard.
So we went and had a cigar and like, yeah, just talked.
Kind of recalled
every day ever since, dude.
Shared like some war stories. Of,
yeah, that was
we
it.
We were shitty people.
And it was know? So funny because he was like, he was still building his timeshare exit company at this time.
Yeah.
And it was like so funny that like we were both stuck, you know, in Illinois doing all this shit, getting in trouble. And then we both broke off two different coasts and just built these way better lives for ourselves, you know? So to meet up after that and after he was having success and I was having success, it was like, you know, it was just a different relationship instead of, you know, trying to score coke and get blacked out drunk every night.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about like
business,
how our
money
is
advancing
doing.
And
exactly.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's that is a difficult part of the process is breaking off of every individual that is, if your life isn't good, your life probably isn't good mainly because of the people that you hang out with.
Of course, yeah.
Okay? And it's and guess what? Look, bro, I was the biggest loser out of all of them. So I can sit here and say, oh, I used to... No. I was the junkie's junkie, right? Why they were smoking heroin, I was shooting it up,
right?
Like, and they're like... Trevor of all people, like when you're saying, oh, there's no way. Yeah, right. Yeah. He's not getting clean, right?
Yeah.
Like I was fighting Trevor the drug addict label a year, 2 years, three, even after getting clean, because it was just like that's how bad I was.
Right.
And I earned it.
Right.
Right. Through my actions.
Sure.
Right. And so it was just like, whatever. Like people can believe whatever they want to believe, but it's just crazy that I was even bad for the people that I was hanging out with.
Yes.
Right? So it's like...
You were in the same situation.
I can't say it's like all other people. Sometimes the people that you're hanging out with brings the worst out in you.
Sure, they're not governing.
You're not good for them, and likewise, they're not good for you, right? And so it's like that's a big adjustment to make, because then you go through no man's land for a period of time where... You don't know anybody. You're still trying to figure yourself out, this new way of life. And that's why it's so easy just to default back to your old ways, because it's just familiar. It's comfortable. I mean, there's a lot of soul searching that has to be done to make the changes that you made, the changes that Eric's made, the changes that I've made. Like this, it's not easy, but at the end of the day, like hindsight's 20/20. It's really not that difficult to look back and say, man, some of these pivoting moments, these difficult decisions were the best decisions that I've ever made in my life that set me up for the position that I'm in now, right?
Yeah. And it's all the mindset. It's all like when you make that decision to change, you know, when you make the decision to be sober for yourself, or you make the decision to be disciplined every day, you make the decision to make more money and, you know, not ever have to work for somebody. Like once that decision is made, then it's just hard work.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you get lucky. People always, like, people say I'm lucky all the time from my childhood. They're like, oh, you're so lucky you got off your murder charge. You're so lucky that you found that the bike shop and found that partner out there. You're so lucky that you know Eric. And
you're so lucky
that you
couldn't find a job.
Yeah.
You got,
I don't think all the other stuff.
Yeah.
When they say I'm lucky for getting off a murder charge, I'm like, how unlucky was I to get the murder charge?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, and then people that tell me I'm lucky, I'm like, are you willing to move to San Diego with no money and take a job making $100 a day to grow that into a multi-million-dollar business?
Yeah.
Are you willing to work 7 days a week for years and years and years to do that? Are you willing to leave that life behind to then, you know, take a chance with your best friend that's starting a business on the other side of the coast when you have never done phone sales, have sold everything in person?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that wasn't a guarantee either.
Okay.
It's like people look at this. And that happens a lot too, where people look at this wholesale business that we've created and they're like, oh, you're friends with Eric and you went out there and you just like overnight started making millions of dollars. It's like, no, that's not the case. We didn't know this was going to
be
what it is.
Yeah.
Like all it took was me, Eric and Shyla working our asses off to this day. Today, right now, I guarantee, what day is it? It's Tuesday?
Yeah.
I guarantee Eric's in the office right now running comps for the team, taking over phone calls, closing deals, managing the sales floor. Like, we're still doing this shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's still taking, we're still in the middle of it, taking a ton of work.
Yeah.
I work more now than I ever have. You know, that's not luck.
So, here's the thing. A step up usually doesn't look like a step up. It usually looks like taking a step backwards. And that's the problem, right? Is most people, they won't do anything unless it looks like an advancement, right? Like, taking a job where you're making $100 a day, that wasn't really something that looked like an advancement in your life from what you were doing and the money that you were making with a skill that you already had being in the trades. Mm-hmm. But you had to take a step back in order to be able to accept that, right? And that ultimately set you up to put you in a position where you could eventually make partner, mm-hmm. right? And have equity. And then boom, 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 one thing led to another. And the reason why I share that story is because a lot of people don't know, Joe Rogan didn't get paid anything for the first like 13 or 14 UFC fights.
Yeah. Or when he started his podcast.
Those
were free things he started.
Okay. That's what I'm like. And he was doing Fear Factor at the time when he did that. So he was already making money from Fear Factor. Okay. And Dana White hit him up and said, okay, I know that you know about MMA. This is your thing. Like, would you be open to doing the commentary for the UFC or whatever? And he goes, we were losing so much money back then at those first few fights when we took over that we couldn't pay him anything. Mm. And he just went out there and accepted it, right? And he did at least 13 or 14 fights for no money. So that opportunity that he has now to make whatever he made, I mean, they got to be paying him very well to be a commentator for the UFC. Everybody looks forward when they order a fight to hear Joe Rogan. Sure. I mean, he's got to be there. And then whatever the buffer guy is.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a couple staples that you kind of expect when you order a pay-per-view fight. And Joe Rogan's one of them. He's got to be getting paid whatever, $1 million a fight. But what set him up to get to the point where he can make a seven-figure check doing something that he loves, and what set him up was taking a step back and doing it for nothing,
right,
in order to put himself in a position to get lucky enough,
mm-hmm.
to be able to make probably seven figures doing what he does now,
right?
And it's something that he enjoys doing. And so it's like that like, anytime that you want to advance your business and step up in business, sometimes it takes that big hire.
Yeah.
You know, you taking a step back in terms of your pay to bring somebody else on that's equal to you in terms mm-hmm. of a skill or talent that can help take the load off. So financially, does it look like it's a step up? No, it looks like a step back on paper. But in reality, keep zooming out,
right,
to a higher elevated view, so where you could see 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. Too many people are making decisions that connect with where they're at today, and they're just plugging holes. Shit, I lost this person. Okay, let's just replace that one person.
Yeah.
They're not looking at 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road and starting to make decisions that connect with where they want to go versus just connecting with, how do I stay afloat?
Yeah, how do I fix
these
leaks?
Yeah. How do I put out today's fires so that I have a job to show up to tomorrow,
right,
even though you own the business?
Right.
Like,
well, I think it's like, I must say this all the time, but I always think it goes back to mindset. Like,
it is
mindset. It's all mindset, but it's like, I always say this too. Everybody's trying to save a nickel instead of make a buck, you know?
Mm.
And it's like, if I go to a coffee shop and they hand me one of those punch cards or something, and they're like, oh, your 10th cup is on the house. I'm like, no, thanks. Like, I'm not trying to save any money.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make money.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's the same thing when I moved out to North Carolina from San Diego. It's like every single person I talk to in North Carolina, like, oh, where'd you move from? San Diego. Oh, I bet it's a lot cheaper to live out here in North Carolina. I'm like, I didn't move across the country to save money.
Yeah,
I moved across the country to make money.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, it's such that, like, we're so ingrained of clipping coupons and getting promo codes, all this stuff where it's like, you shouldn't, like, why not make as much money as you possibly can so you're not trying to save money, you know, like with a coupon, I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
Like, that mindset of just, like, trying to nickel and dime, it goes into every aspect of your life.
Well,
it makes it so you don't take risks.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's plenty of people that know what the cheapest gas station is across town.
Yeah, they'll drive.
So that they say 5 cents a gallon on 20 gallon. I'm like, that's a dollar.
That's a buck.
You yeah. literally just drove 10 minutes out of your way to save a dollar.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes back.
And I'm sure you spent a dollar in gas getting to that further gas station. So where are we at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all a wash, right?
It's a wash.
Like, if anything, now you're spent the dollar on the gas and you're out the time.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If anything, you're penny pinching to the point where you're actually losing money,
exactly.
right? Rather
exactly.
than making money. And so...
Yeah.
What would you say the top three ingredients are for success? Like if somebody just said, hey, give me three ingredients, and you've already alluded to one in terms of mindset, right?
You've
said that a few different times because, I mean, you can have the most talent in the entire world. If you don't have the right mindset, I guarantee you that there's a lot more people than we even want to fathom that are way smarter than us, but they don't have the, maybe even way more skilled, but they don't have the mindset, right?
Yeah.
So I would guess, obviously, that's probably one of the three ingredients.
Well, yeah, mindset, which I'll include that with like discipline.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm a very disciplined person, but I just have a routine. And it's like, if you don't stick to a routine every single day, like we talked about earlier where doing cardio in the morning and lifting weights after work, like that's just my day. It's not a decision I have to make. I don't wake up and go, oh, should I work out today?
No, well, do you wake up and say, should I brush my teeth today or
exactly.
not? Should I shower today or not?
That's a good point.
Yeah. There's certain things. Should I put clothes on today?
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't think about it. We just get up, we go to the bath, we brush our teeth, we put our clothes, like there's no second guessing. This just part of our day.
Part of our day.
Yeah.
So the discipline of that structure, like a very structured routine has helped me be successful because I don't make decisions out the day of what I have to do. It's just I have to do it. That's it. I'm just doing it. I don't fight with myself. I'm just doing it, whether it's working out or work or whatever, learning, whatever it is. So I think that's number one for me. Number two is just taking risk and betting on yourself too. It's like everybody's so damn scared of everything.
Mm.
Like you tell the normal person, like I'll use my brother an example in a loving way because I love my brother to death. But he has been with, he was with the same company for 20 something years. He just switched companies recently. He makes a lot of money. He's very successful. He has a great family and all that. But I remember like struggling with my first business at the bike shop, and he would be like, man, you just need to get a job, And I'm like, I know it seems like that right now, but eventually it won't, I'm going to struggle for sure, but I don't need a job. I can do this, And just like taking that risk and betting on myself ultimately ended up where there's months I make six figures, And it's like, how could I do that if I had a job? Probably not.
No.
Unless
you're a professional athlete.
I could have mountain.
I just
needed to apply myself.
Yeah.
but I think that too, I always say that's my superpower is hitting rock bottom because now taking risk, for me to move across the country to start a business is not
a risk to you anymore.
I mean, I went through a murder trial. I faced life in prison.
Yeah.
You think I'm scared to move across the country to start a business? Like that to me is my biggest superpower is I don't really have that fear. So that being able to take risk and silencing that fear in your head and that doubt in your head. I read a book Untethered Soul years ago.
Oh, I read that too.
It's a great book, right?
Yeah. The, roommate in your mind.
Yeah. And it talks about a roommate in your mind. And if that was a real person giving you all this negative information, would you be friends with? Would you take any of their advice?
You would have booted them out.
You would have stopped talking to that person years ago. But at the same time, you're listening to this voice telling you that you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And it's too risky and you're going to lose everything and you're going to fail. So when you can silence that voice in your head, then you can start taking risk and living with your heart and knowing what is right instead of your mind.
Yeah.
Your mind can fuck you up.
Yeah.
So those two things for sure. And then
discipline.
And it's all mindset. Discipline, taking risks, silencing that negativity. And then the third thing for me is just just burning the boats and going all in on whatever you're doing, because I didn't know a damn thing about real estate or wholesaling or anything when I started this
business
or a bicycle business. I was an electrician. Then, you know, a year later, I'm selling pink beach cruisers on the beach. So you have to go all in and just become obsessed with whatever you're doing. Like, that obsession is what makes you learn really fast and get really good at it. And when I got into the bike business, I got obsessed with bikes. I learned how to fix them, sell them, everything, manufacture them. I was all in on bikes for 15 years. And then I got into the wholesale space. That's one reason I got rid of the bike shop, because I was so focused on wholesaling. I didn't care about the bikes anymore.
Trying to find a manager to run the shop was a distraction.
It was a distraction for making more money.
Yeah.
And like, I've only been in this space for 2.5 years, and like, I'm teaching hundreds of people every week, and I'm teaching some people that have been in this game for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, because I've learned so much in such a short period of time because I'm completely obsessed with it, you know? So you have to become obsessed with whatever you're doing, or else you're going to have an exit strategy.
Yeah. Well, I read something or heard something that said, more entrepreneurs need to train like an athlete. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean in a physical way. And what they meant by that was train like an athlete, meaning always be working on your craft. They're obsessed with what they're doing and excelling at what they're doing and always trying to find ways to get better at what they're doing, right? So when you say train like an athlete, what that means is there is an off season for them. And what do?
Practice.
They practice. What do they do after practice? Some of the best, they practice, right? And like, what do they do after they practice and practice? Then they watch film, right? They're trying to find, they totally immerse themselves in what they're doing, and they become obsessed with it to the point to where they become great at it, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, how often do people get so tired of just showing up to their business, and then when they go home, they, you know, veg out, they use things as a distraction, not to think about the stress or the problems that they're dealing with, rather than figuring out a way, like an athlete, to continue getting better at what they're doing. Really what it comes down to is self-development, personal development, and you're developing a mindset that is going to get you where you want. It all starts and begins with the mind.
Yeah.
I read a book called The Brain, and I've read it like 3 different times because I was like, dude, we're stuck with this thing for the rest of our life. I might as well figure this thing the fuck out, because if I don't, it's going to own me.
Right.
I have the ability, if I understand how it works, I have the ability to put it in certain environments and actually mold it in a way that's conducive to the outcome that I want.
Right.
Right. So there's 2 different options. Either you just kind of float through life and coast through life, and this thing that has the ability to determine the outcome of your life will just be molded by happenstance, just floating through life. Oh, I'm around these people, and then this information or that, like, these people are complaining. Guess what? Those complaints go into your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Those weeds start growing in your own mind, right? And so I was just like, okay, all we are is just a product of our environment. How many environments can I control?
Right.
And the more environments that I can control every single day, the more I have the ability to control who I become. And that individual has the ability to create a life that I could have only once dreamed about.
Right.
And so let's get deep into the mind. Let's figure this thing out that's controlling all of this. Every action that we take started with a thought, started in our mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, man, I need to go deeper and deeper and deep. Like, a habit is just something that the brain, good or bad, that just happens automatically. And the reason why it's so difficult to grow is because now you're having to go against something that's happening subconsciously without you even trying. So in order to change, you have to be consciously aware of your actions and catch yourself when it's doing it automatically, stop yourself from doing that, and then revert to the decision that results in the outcome that you want, right? And so it's like, We're going against something that's happening automatically. These habits that we've had forever, it's just running a program.
Right.
95% of our decisions are just a program.
Yeah.
And we wake up and it's going to run that same program. So that's why it's so difficult. And when we start going down a path of change, why we revert back is because all of a sudden it just happens. You just miss that one workout And then next thing you know, it's been a week and then a month. And then you're just back to exactly the way you were because it's just a program that's running. And it's very difficult. You have to be very intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Like you talked, obsessed with a certain outcome so that you're analyzing everything and you're living with far more intention. And you're saying, I don't care what I have to go through, but I'm going to put myself in this environment every single day, no matter how much my brain squirms and yells and screams at me, because I know eventually that will subside and it'll eventually just be part of who I am. And then that program will now run automatically.
Yeah,
you've like you talked it. About, right?
Yeah, and that's why I'm so obsessed with the discipline thing. Yeah. Like I told you earlier that, you know, idle hands or idle minds, the devil's playground for me. Like my automatic wiring will go into self-destruction.
Yeah, me too.
And I know that. Like I know that's how I'm wired.
Yeah.
So that's the reason I do really hard things every day, whether it's cardio or the cold plunge or the sauna or working out, whatever it is, or, you know, I do these Spartan races. Like I never
let me ask you this. When you say that and you're like, well, that's why I do these things, okay? So again, you're controlling the environment that you put yourself in because you know the alternative is not good, right?
Exactly.
So the definition of average is the majority of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are the majority of people, right? They're sad, they're depressed, they're struggling paycheck to pay, like all of these things. So, you know, when they have idle time, what do they do with it?
Nothing constructive.
Nothing constructive.
Right.
So we're almost really no different than anybody else, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now we might even be more destructive,
right,
with our time. Like, just because they're not doing nothing constructive with their time, at least they're not fully like drinking or drugs or that, you know, and completely demolishing their life. Just because you're not doing that doesn't mean
you're not
ruining your life by not being constructive.
Yeah, and if you stay at this level, you're ultimately going down in life.
Yeah.
You know, you got to keep progressing.
Well, life's advancing.
It's advancing, and if you stay level, you're gonna fall way behind.
Yeah.
But, like, that goes back to why, like, I think my superpower is hitting rock bottom because I wasted so much time in my youth that I want to be very efficient with my time now.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can I be most efficient with my time? Like I told you yesterday, I drove here from Salt Lake. It took me 4.5 hours. The minute I got here, I was like, I got to go to the gym. Like I finally get out of the car. I got to go to the gym and get a workout in. Like it's every little thing. I worked all morning. I'm doing this with you now. After this, I'm going to the gym. Tomorrow, I'm going on a hike. Thursday, I'm going on another hike. You know, it's like, I got to plan all these things that like in my mind of like, so I'm not going to waste any time.
Yeah.
Because if I just sat in my hotel room, you know, who knows what would happen?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be good. Like, yeah. I can't do that.
Yeah.
I know I can't do that. It's why I don't have a chair at my office.
Yeah.
I'm on my feet all day long. Yeah. I do not sit all day long because I know I sit down and I'm just like, oh, like, you know, and like it, that goes back to people think it's hard to stand for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
But it's a lot harder to sit on your ass for 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because you feel like shit.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm on my feet all day. Every second of the day, I didn't have a TV for over 10 years. I just got one thinking I was like, oh, let me get it for the UFC fights.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll download Netflix. And I don't even know how to turn it on still.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to sit it's in my house. I'm never home. I'm like, I just want to stay busy. Every split second I have, I try to do something positive, whether it's working out or business or learning. I don't listen to the radio. I don't listen to, like, I just listen to podcasts. I try to better myself all the time.
Yeah.
But it takes that for me because I know those demons will creep in if I give them a little chance.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's how I'm wired.
Yeah.
And I just can't do it.
Yeah. There's a cliff.
Yeah.
Some people, it's like a slow decline.
Yeah.
For me, I'm like, one bad decision, all of them.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know, like, I again, you know, running 10 miles, I don't half-ass it, right?
Right.
Like, it's all out, whether that is positive or negative, right?
And
we need to be self-aware enough to understand, like, okay, well, I'm the type of person that would do X, right? If I've got free time, okay, cool. If you know that about yourself, utilize the intel and go to war.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what you do is you get intel
and
then you go to war against the enemy. The enemy is you,
sure.
Unfortunately, sure. Right? Like, that's just the, and guess what? The enemy is me right now today.
Yep.
Because I guarantee you in 5 years or 10 years from now, I'm going to be a completely different person. And if I just get comfortable with who I am today because I've made a ton of progress versus the individual that I was, dude, that ain't good.
No,
that ain't good. That's why I'm always going to be enemy number one,
right?
And put myself in an environment where I am showing me who's truly in control and who dictates my life.
Yep.
I have a meeting with my mind for 2 hours every single morning, mm-hmm. with no music, no podcasts, nothing in the ears, mm-hmm. right? We're so used to distracting ourselves that we don't even know ourselves, right? And so that's why it's so easy to conform, and the herd mentality, like you've seen on the late night shows where somebody stands there and they look up at the sky and then people walk by and they all start looking. It's just herd mentality, yeah. right? Like, nope, we're tapped in looking around at other people trying to determine how we should live our lives or how we should react, versus being intentional and saying, what type of life do I want and what would it require of me, mm-hmm. in order to get that outcome?
Yeah.
And it's really not that difficult. Yes, you will have difficult days, but you'll also have days that are euphoric,
yeah.
where you're like, holy cow, it feels good that I'm operating in an undeniable way, head and shoulders above the majority of people.
Yeah.
Right? And so, yes, you'll experience highs and lows. We all experience highs
and lows.
You're
going to experience that
anyways,
no matter what.
Right?
Yeah. That's the thing.
Might as well get something from it.
Yeah, because that is the fear most people have. It's like, oh, what if this happens in the housing market? Or what if this happens in your business? Or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, that can happen to you too.
Yeah.
Like, my risk versus reward is way bigger.
Yeah.
than yours. So yeah. it's like, you know, I'm willing to take it,
yeah.
you know, but I do the same thing every day when I get home from work. I just sit in silence and I don't do it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like a psychopath like you.
Yeah.
But I do it for like 10, yeah. like 10 minutes.
Hey, but I'm not sitting there.
Okay. Okay.
My legs are moving.
That's different.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, so
literally
I don't even sit there in silence.
Yeah, right? I do yeah. sit. Like, I need that, though. I need this, like, because there's so much noise going on all day
yeah.
in the office. There's a million problems, putting this fire out there, that fire out there. I'm making decisions. I'm like, it's a lot out of your mind throughout the day. And then to get home and just, like, sit, I close my eyes, my phone's off, and I just sit in silence and yeah. just kind of reflect on the day, what I did right, what I did wrong, how can I be intentional with the rest of my day, tomorrow, all that, and it just calms me down, gets me ready to, you know, get into, like,
kind of shifting your state.
Yeah.
I need it, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So, dude, thank you for coming.
Yeah, man.
That was great. Yeah, it was a good time. How do people connect with you if they want to connect with you?
Instagram's the best way. Yeah. The Tony Mont on Instagram.
Cool.
You can DM me there, follow me. Everything I offer is on there too.
And if they're looking to get in the wholesale game
for sure. Yeah, so I do dispositions mostly. That's what I teach,
the
backside of it, assigning the contracts to cash buyers. And I have a disposition course on there. I sell scripts and contracts. And
on your Instagram in the bio? Or
in the bio, yeah, there's a link there. If you guys need help with wholesaling at all, just reach out to me.
Cool. Check out Tony. He's a good dude, obviously. After the last hour, you've come to realize that as well. Appreciate you coming out.
Thanks, brother.
Yeah, it was fun.
Loved it.
I did too.
Appreciate it.
So share the show with somebody that you love and care about that would get value out of it. Other than that, guys, keep kicking ass. We'll see you next week.